This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Let me see. Did I miss it? I may have.
Well, I'm Ian Frazier, and we're going to 400 Ferry Street in Newark, New Jersey. Is this a turn?
The New Yorker's Ian Frazier is kind of an explorer. He's reported from the Rust Belt, from Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, and Siberia, and God knows where else. But today, he's just going a few miles from home.
Well, I like to walk around. I walk all over wherever it is I happen to find myself, but I live in suburban New Jersey, and I, from time to time, I'll walk down into Newark. It's 7 miles or something from my house, and just walk around and look at stuff. You'll see abandoned buildings or buildings that are just, nothing's happening there, and you wonder about them. There's so many of them. And when I heard that there was one of these buildings was going to be turned into a vertical farm, that is a farm that uses space vertically, just the way apartment buildings use space. That fascinated me. And it is different. It's different from rooftop farms. It's different from growing in an abandoned lot. Thanks for coming down. Were you coming? I hope you're coming down anyway. Or
no, it's fine. You're important,
all
okay?
Right, well,
and besides, I like to see you. So,
I like to see you, too. That's Ed Harwood. He's an agricultural inventor. He's been an agricultural inventor for a long time.
I'm the chief science officer at Aero Farms. I invented the majority of the equipment that we're currently using in this facility to grow baby leafy greens.
I admire inventors. I'm from Ohio. The Wright brothers are from Ohio. And Ohio actually has a museum of inventors. It has a hall of fame of inventors. My father was an inventor. He worked on plastics for Standard Oil of Ohio. What I admired about Ed Harwood was when I first looked at his grow table, it looked to me like the original Wright brothers plane. And, you know, it's just, I think, just canvas and wood. And that what they did with that is just staggering to me. And the name of the plane is the Flyer. I think that's like the most beautiful name, like Flyer. That's like Ohio, you know. We keep it simple and ingenious.
So I was trying to remember, you know, when was the aha, when all they were,
right.
When does the aha happen?
Yeah.
So Travis and I always had lunch at Wegmans in the balcony up above.
Wegmans is an East Coast grocery store chain.
You can see the produce department.
And Ed Harwood, he often had lunch there with his colleague Travis while they were working on a plan for growing lettuce indoors.
That's the real aha that happened at that particular time, right? So we were thinking about growing heads.
At first, they were talking about just heads of lettuce.
And we're looking at a head of lettuce, £1, $1. And then we see a bag of lettuce, and it's less than a pound in the bag, and it's like $8, $9. Doesn't take a whole lot of difference there to tell you don't want to be growing heads. That was a pretty big aha for us, because then we switched totally. We stopped working on that whole other project and moved to this.
So they decided that the crop they would grow would be baby salad greens, and the method they chose was aeroponics. This does not use soil. Aeroponics nourishes and waters plants by means of a mist, a sprays of mist on the roots. So what do you put the plants in? Ed also had to invent a growing medium, and that medium is a piece of cloth.
But the cloth, you went to fabric stores over and over and over, and you're just trying.
And Jo-Ann Fabrics ladies were really helpful, yes. And they would say, so what color do you want? And what pattern do you want? And they would be very frustrated with that whole thing. But I tried just about everything.
I mean, that's the fabric, right?
Yes.
It's a fleece, basically.
Yeah.
The seeds are put on this fleece. They germinate. Their roots go through and below the fleece where they are available to be misted. And the leaves grow above the fleece, which holds the plant in place and holds it upright.
So let's see. Let's start down. Let's just quickly walk down.
So once he had the technology down, he built a grow table 100 feet long in an abandoned canoe factory. And his grow table worked very well with very little water and no soil, and it was extremely portable. I mean, that's a key thing for vertical farming. It has to be light enough that you can stack the trays one on top of another. So what we have in this vertical farm, the grow tables are about 80 feet long, and they're stacked 7 beds high, and they are growing these baby salad greens. And if you look in, there are armies and armies of baby salad greens.
It looks kind of like a lit-up high-rise with veins of green running through in between the layers of lights.
From a distance, it's the top of a cruise ship, right? All lit up at night or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a big tank reservoir that sits underneath the machine. And we manage the nutrient solution and its pH and a bunch of other things in it to make sure that it's what the plants want. So from the pumps, it goes down some...
Everything about the plants, everything that's important to their growth, water, nutrients, light, are controlled and monitored by computer algorithms, which adjust everything minutely. At one point, they told me it was like 170,000 data points is what they're following. Because of this intense focus of technology on these humble greens, they can go from seed to harvest in 18 days.
In that sense, it's pretty simple. What's actually going on is a little bit more complex.
I don't think anybody imagines vertical farming as replacing conventional agriculture, but it is an interesting accompaniment to it. Over the long haul, it appears that it will be more environmentally friendly than growing in a field. In the first place, it uses a tiny amount of the water that conventional agriculture uses. In the second place, you can put this farm anywhere, which means that you do not have to drive these salad greens for days and days to reach the market. They use LED lights, and LED lights, it is a big expense, but the cost of LED lights goes down all the time, the efficiency of LED lights goes up all the time, and it looks as if this is going to be a very practical way of providing light to the growing plants. And about 5% of the physical mass of the plants is carbon, and the carbon comes from the air.
It comes out of the air, and it's in the supermarket. Tell me what the CO2 problem was, because you told me that when you were first doing it and the plants were not working out that well, you wondered, wait a minute, how much CO2 are they getting?
Yes, so I was growing in the basement of the canoe factory,
right. And
I did not have any air coming in because I was trying to save money on heating the building and the rest of that.
So
I had it pretty well sealed up,
uh-huh.
Okay? So that CO2 is depleted in that room. as a result of the plants, uh-huh. and without any more coming back in, that level is going to go way down. Mm-hmm. So outdoors, we have about 400 ppm of right. CO2.
Yeah.
And
unfortunately,
yes, but I had driven it down to 50 ppm. At 50 wow. ppm, there's not enough carbon to make more plant. Uh-huh. So I had these little tiny plants, and they would just stay that way. They would not grow like anybody else's plants that I saw. And here we take it to about 1,000 ppm.
Wow, so yeah. you do enrich here.
Yes.
We okay.
do. We have it delivered by companies that make the CO2 from the air. So, you know, we kind of have this whole circle wow. cycle going, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a problem. Anybody thinks, well, we got not enough CO2, you know.
That's right.
And the carbon... Does it only come from the air?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're taking 1,000,000 pounds out of here, you're taking 50,000 pounds of carbon that was in the air.
Yes.
To me, it's
yes.
kind of incredible. And that we're eating carbon that comes out of the air and it's in the supermarket. Ed Harwood had an idea to do this without anybody saying, you know, Ed, we need you to do this. He was just thinking about how could you solve this problem of growing plants indoors with the minimum amount of water in a way that could fit inside a building? And it was just a problem that he set himself and actually solved. He pulls this plant out of kind of out of thin air. He did something that was close to magical, just out of the love of doing it. Really. And then it can be translated into this factory in Newark where factories came and went. And to me, that's just, there's an elegance about that. What would you say is your most notable invention, or what invention are you proudest of?
Well, I'm very proud of figuring out how to grow in cloth. But there's sort of like a runner-up. I thought that we should be able to feed calves automatically. So this is my very first one, all right? And I took a toilet and all the parts of a toilet to be able to automatically feed the calves, okay? So I would fill up the toilet bowl with milk, all right? I had the plunger, so you go to the calf's bucket and you push the plunger, okay? And all of that's on a wagon. So it's very simple stuff, okay? But in a way, those are the things that make you curious, and if you get rewarded slightly from doing it, then you continue to do these, you know, you continue to think that way, I guess.
Did that calf feeder work out? I mean, was it something you...
No one was pleased with me going around outside in you know, in sight of everybody in Fort Collins with a toilet feeding calves. Okay. Told, okay, fine, but figure out some other configuration.
Yeah, much less elegant than what you've done.
Inventor Ed Harwood of Aero Farms talking with Ian Fraser. Fraser's written for The New Yorker for more than 40 years, and not long ago he published a great collection of his reporting called Hogs Wild.